Do you have big dreams for your community but don't know how to pay for them? Does the idea of asking for money make your skin crawl? Does the word fundraiser make you want to go bury your head in the sand? What if I told you that you can put the fun back in fundraising and make all your dreams come true?
Did you know that we have a free community of women just like you, busy moms who are working hard to lead their homeschool co-ops? In our Facebook group, we share resources with each other, we equip leaders with tools and encouragement, and we help you build your community with Christ at the center of it all. So come and join us over there.
Welcome to Lead Your Homeschool Co-op. Do you desire a Christian community with families that fit? Do you find yourself up late at night Googling conflict resolution and how to build a community? Do you dream of a sustainable homeschool group only to feel discouraged when policies fail, logistics get in the way, or a conflict comes up again?
Hello, we are the Homeschool Community Builders. Together, we have more than 30 years of experience in leading successful homeschool groups. But at one time, we too were in co-ops that did not work for our families. We needed deep relationships and a community that would help our families grow in faith. In order to be a part of a sustainable Christian community, we stepped out in faith and trusted God's plan to build the community that we desired.
In this podcast, we will help you create Christ-centered policies, establish a close-knit culture, and develop strong leadership skills so that you can serve your community well. So grab a pen and paper, be ready to take some notes, and be encouraged. You can do this.
Welcome, leaders. Today we have a special guest who is excited to put the fun back in fundraising for us, all of us. Before you try to raise money on your own, listen to this advice from an experienced fundraiser, Riley Mahegan. She's going to help us to be successful in all of our fundraising and endeavors, unlike myself, who tried it without Riley's wisdom. So let me just fill you in on hashtag fail fundraiser. We had a big service project that we do every year. It's serving the police. But it costs a lot because we make breakfast for two shifts of police officers. And every year we feel like we were having to get money from our community to do this, and it was taxing everybody. So the board decided that we would try a fundraiser. We had never done a fundraiser before. So we decided that we would have a concession stand at this Living History event. Now, we know that there was concessions at this other events of the Living History, but there wasn't one at this particular event. So we thought, this is perfect. We'll go do this. We went to Costco. We bought a whole bunch of hamburgers, hot dogs, drinks, everything that you would find at a concession stand. What people bought was hot cocoa. We had hundreds of dollars worth of extra stuff. And shamefully, I have to admit that we took it all back because, you know, Costco will return everything. And so we took all of the stuff back and made Costco eat it, quote unquote. And so,
Oh,
but we did
sad.
not make any money, and it was very discouraging for everybody involved. But I will tell you this, whenever you try something, you just have to know that it might not work out. You always learn something from it. So don't worry, but you can avoid some of these things with Riley's wisdom. All right, so we're here with Riley Mahegan, and we're here to talk about fundraising today. Riley, thank you so much for joining us.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Riley is one of my very best friends, and she co-leads with me over at our homeschool co-op and does a whole lot of other things above and beyond just being in charge of fundraising. But she's been instrumental in helping us raise money for all sorts of things. And so I'm really excited that you could be here and share with our listeners all of your knowledge in helping other people too.
Oh, that's good.
So welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm so super excited to learn from you because we need it for our community too.
So Riley, you want to just tell us a little bit about yourself and how your experience with fundraising?
Yes. So let's see. I'm a homeschooler for, I think I figured out, 14 years. So we've been doing that for a while. And I started fundraising in high school and all of, the sports that I was a part of. We, of course, did fundraisers with our church. But then when I was an adult, we joined with Relay for Life and we did tons of fundraisers. Out in Weld County, we were actually the highest per capita fundraising group out of Weld County. So that was just really
Wow.
exciting and we had a lot of fun with it. But we tried a lot of different things and we found what worked, what didn't, and then carried that through to my son's baseball team, lacrosse, and just trying different things. So it's been fun.
And what is Relay for Life?
So Relay for Life is with the Cancer Society. So they raise funds for cancer research. So of course it's a big nationwide group, but supported strongly, but also a lot of people just don't really know what it is. And so we actually held a walk, a 24-hour walk. And so we formed groups and you walk all night long raising money for cancer
Wow.
research. So it was a lot of fun.
That's
It
awesome.
was really cool.
Okay, so I'm really excited to hear about fundraising, Riley, because we're just starting into this. We're doing our first high school trip this year that we need to fundraise for. So, where do we begin? Can you just talk a little bit about how you do a fundraiser? What makes a successful fundraiser? And what are some of the things to think about when you start doing this?
Oh, big question. Okay. The first thing I would say is that you need to get buy-in. So if you are passionate about it, they will get passionate about it. But if they don't get on board, it's not going to be a successful fundraiser. And so that's kind of the biggest thing that we've seen. There's times where I come in and I'm so excited about a fundraiser, but if they don't buy into it, it's a flop. So really getting that buy-in from whoever is going to participate in it. Any fundraiser that I feel like we are always asking people that we know for money, right? Like our kids, with every sport, there's a fundraiser,
I
and with
hate
every
that.
school thing, there's a fundraiser. I really, really love those fundraisers that branch out and get support from people that are not your friends and family because people want to help. They really do. And sometimes they want to help out in small ways. And so if everybody's willing to give $10 to your cause, that's monumental in the scheme of things, instead of just getting one $20 donation from a friend. And then you're kind of done. You can't reach out to that friend again. You feel like you've already cashed in and that's done. You're cut off. So I like to do
Exactly.
ones that get other people involved in it, the community too.
What prepares somebody for a good fundraisers? You have buy-in from your people. You have a plan to get support. Well, maybe you could talk about some of the kinds of fundraisers that actually go outside of your group of family and friends, because that's a pet peeve of mine, actually, as well. It's
Is asking your friends and
If we're
family.
fundraising, we might as well just like have the money because we're giving it to our own kids.
Yeah, and honestly, like there's some fundraisers like that too, where you just send out emails and ask people to donate because sometimes that's what people want to do. They don't want to buy your butter braid. They don't want to buy a chance to win a TV. They'll happily just give you $50 if you will stop bothering them. That's not a bad idea either. So that's actually one of them. I think, your kiddos writing a letter to ask for support is never a bad idea. Asking those people, hey, would you be willing to help me get to my goal in order to get on this high school trip or to whatever they're fundraising for? I love to see the community involved in ways that are fun, and it gives them something. So we have done auctions or raffle drawings or opportunity drawings, and those are super fun, and they really do bring in some really good cash flow. But they're a lot of work, and you have to hear no a lot. And not everybody loves that. Not everybody's good at asking. Not everybody's good at hearing no. So there's that. But if you can offer them something, so we have done in the past, we call them scavenger hunts. And it's not really something that everybody could maybe organize, but it gives somebody a night out. And so they go, they do an activity, and they're willing to pay for that because it's like they had a date night. So we really recommend, hey, get your couple friends together. Go out on a date night together, or just a group of moms or whatever. We have done beer pong tournaments. I don't know if that's appropriate. And cornhole tournaments are great because you might get, you might start off with your uncle and aunt, but then they know people. And so then they branch out to other people and they get a night out and they're going out there, they're playing cornhole, and they might have a chance to win $100 or they might just enjoy the night. And that's fine too. So I think anything that gives people an experience, they like that.
I just had a great idea
Yeah.
because pickleball is like super huge right now. Like everybody's playing pickleball. It's like the best thing for date night and for like all the people love to play pickleball. Maybe that
Yeah.
would be a good
That
fundraiser.
would be fun. Yeah. And then you just have to
Yeah.
find places, right? So you have to find places that house all of these people, or the ability to do that. And so that does become a little bit of a challenge, but so much of the time, if you have a big network of people, eventually you can find someone that's willing to
Right.
let you use their house or a building,
Right.
a park. Even parks work great too. So those
So
are.
for something like that, the cornhole tournament, would the fundraising come from them buying a ticket to participate?
Yes. So they have to pay in to sign up. So, and I always collect the money up front. They have to pay for entry. And then if they don't show up, thank you so much for your donation.
Right.
So that's just how that works. So yeah, they would pay in $50 to play in this tournament with the opportunity to win, $200 or whatever you choose what that breakdown is. So you can choose how much you want to pay out. And then the winners, usually we pay out, like in a cornhole tournament, we would pay the top three teams, however much, depending on how many teams you get. But you have to kind of decide, like, my goal is to have 20 teams. Okay, 20 teams, that's a lot, but you can make money off of that. And it's a fun night. So
So is there like a percentage that you would be like, okay, if we have so many, we're going to take 15% and that's what they're going to win, or is it half, or like what's normally
that's a great question.
good
We
question.
normally look at the so like we do Super Bowl squares, and they give $20 per Super Bowl square, and there's 100 squares. So then we were like, okay, well, if we paid out 50%, then we get 50%. That's a pretty good odds or pretty good rate. So I really think it just depends on each fundraiser to kind of see, but because you want it to be worth it for them to want to win, right? If they're only going to make $100 if they win first prize, yeah, it's not really that big. If I paid $50 in to play, I'm really only making 50. So you really, it's each fundraiser, you kind of have to look at how much is this going to benefit us, but still provide a good prize for the winner.
Yeah, we've actually looked at doing some fundraisers and then decided against it because of the time and energy and effort that it was going to be put in. The kids weren't going to make any money on it. Like taking pictures was one. It's not something you could do as a group, but that would be a good one if you had the talent yourself as a family
Right.
to do on your own.
Yeah, and there's a lot of cost benefit analysis there going on, right? Like, I'm not willing to put in all of this time but not get out. I mean, it's just not worth your time if you're not going to make enough money. So you really have to weigh those things. One of my least favorite fundraisers, is that okay if I jump to that? It's nice because it involves the community, but the give back nights at restaurants, they're so generous and I love that they offer that. The downside is that they're going to give us 10% of their sales, and I'm going to go in there with my family to eat because I want 10% of that sales, but then I'm going to spend $50 and I'm not getting $50 back to my organization. So that's always so frustrating to me. Like, if it's just 10% of their sales and it's just whoever comes in, that's great. And it's just an easy check. You really just advertised it. You basically were free advertisement for them, and that's great. But if I really push all of my people to go so that they get more money, I just feel like they might as well just write me a check for the amount of money that they would have eaten out, because they probably would have eaten at home. I mean, my group would have. So I really just spent $50 to get $5 back, and that just
That's
doesn't
not a
feel
good
good.
return.
It's not. And you feel bad doing it, though. Like, I always feel bad not going, but at the same time, I don't want to spend my $50 there. So that's a hard one though, but it's
What do you think about fundraisers where you are selling something like butter braids? You'd mentioned butter braids a couple of times.
honestly, that's a pretty good fundraiser because people want them. Like it's kind of crazy to me. Like I'm not a huge butter braid, like I gotta eat me some butter braids, but there are people that are crazy butter braid people and they will buy every single time. And that one surprises me every time. And I don't remember exactly how much you get back per butter braid, but
I think it's good.
it's pretty significant. It's a pretty good return as well.
If you get half, like we've done Krispy Kremes, and you can get half, I feel like if you can get half of what you sell it for, that's a good return
It is.
on your money.
Yeah.
Yeah. I personally like the butter braids.
I mean, they're good. I mean, I
They're
have a
tasty.
freezer full, but that's they get stuck in the freezer because I don't remember to pull them out and use them. So they're still there
They're
from
for
last
special
year.
occasions.
For sure. All those special
So you
occasions.
walk around neighborhoods and sell them just to the neighborhood people.
My kids will. That's
Pretty
actually
much.
some of the things that my girls really enjoy. They really enjoy doing that. But that's the thing too, I guess, with the buy-in is that your kiddos need to know that they're going to hear no a lot. And I think that's great. I think that builds a personality and that builds
Yeah.
resiliency, but they're going to hear no a lot, but then they might get a yes that's over and above, right? And then that person might buy five butter braids and it's all worth it to have heard all of those no's to get the
Right.
five butter braids or
I think
whatever.
it's helpful if you go with your kid to do it at first. So, like, I went and I delivered the pitch first and gave an example of what you can do. And actually, I have a script and maybe I'll put that in the show notes. But just to try, if they're really not interested, to get to that no as quickly as possible so that you could move on to the next house. So for me, it's about like just get through as many homes as you can and get to the no quickly. Like you don't want to sit there and stand there talking to somebody trying to convince them. Like just
Right.
get the no and go on. You know,
Yeah.
it's a numbers
It's just, I don't want a butter braid
it's a
today.
numbers
Yeah,
game. I just don't. And then you get a door like me that can't say no, and then I buy all of the things. So you never know. You might get some
That's
of
good
those
to
too.
know. I'm glad
It
I
is
found
good
that
to
out about
know.
you.
Oh, don't worry, my
I'll be
husband's there. He will help me to say no.
over
He'll close the door in your face.
there. Okay. Have to make sure you answer.
That's
So,
right.
what has been your most profitable fundraiser?
So I was thinking about that and thinking about individually and group wise. Individually, honestly, some of our kiddos have done just so good with butter braids. That really has been really good. That
Wow.
and finding, using their talents, and I think that was something that Pam had really pushed, is that finding something that is their talent and using that to make money for themselves, for their group, right? Within their group. That is great because then they already have the buy-in because they already love doing that. And so that's fantastic. The group fundraisers. So with Relay for Life, we did a purple toilet. And this was so
Oh,
fun.
yeah.
And part of it is it was Relay for Life, but flushing cancer. And so we moved a toilet purple onto their front porch or on their front lawn, and they had to pay to have it removed. And yeah, you would make $20 a toilet for moving it. We actually had three toilets going at one time. It was like a full-time job though. So again, your time balance.
Right.
So we did try that over Christmas. We tried it with some inflatable gnomes and people sent it around to other people. What's fun about that is that it does kind of build a community, right? Like you're passing it to somebody and then they're passing it, and all of a sudden you don't even know the person whose lawn it's on. Like nobody in your whole entire organization knows this person because it's just been passed around. So that's kind of fun. And then we did the raffle, and the raffle is by far our best way to fundraise. And we,
Can you tell us more about that?
yeah, so we've done it, oh, for baseball, and we've done it for our homeschool co-op. But basically, you choose three or four items, and you can choose more if you'd like to. We like to keep it small because the fewer items that you have, I think the more people want to buy in for it and the more you're going to make. So we have done it basically, we've chosen a TV. We did a Blackstone this last time. And
Your pods.
AirPods. Yeah. AirPods. And so they just buy a ticket. They can buy one for 10, three for 20, and it's their option. And you can obviously choose whatever cost you want to there. And then
Right.
they buy the opportunity to win one of those items. What's nice about that is that it gives the opportunity for people to do sales individually, and all of that profit goes to them specifically. Or if they do it as a group, then that gets divided up by the number of people that are selling.
What are some places that kids sell that to community as opposed to family?
So that one's one you can do door to door. You can absolutely do that one to door to door. Obviously your churches and community in that way. And then we have in the past gone outside of grocery stores. There's a couple of retail places that will let you. And so really that's just getting approval from the store, sometimes the corporation, to stand outside and sell it. We have had
Does
we've
that
we've been
work pretty
very
well?
we it, it has. And let's see. So this last time, well, we made about $8,000, our last one.
Wow.
Yeah, so really good.
How much did, and that was profit. That was after you had purchased the items.
Yes, that was after the cost of the prizes. Yep.
So when you are selling them, do you purchase the prizes first or do you wait till you have sold the tickets and then purchase the prize?
We do buy them ahead of time. So that is where you have to have a little bit of skin in the game. And you wouldn't always have to buy them ahead of time, but we do. And a lot of times we'll say, well, actually a couple of times this has happened, that after we have started, we have the prizes purchased, then they've gone on sale. And so then we've returned them and bought the cheaper one. So that was nice. We saved a little bit of extra money. If you can find them on sale, maybe that's the TV that you decide to buy, right? Black Friday. If there's a Black Friday deal on something, maybe that's the prize that you're going to choose for your raffle, even if it's not for 6 months. If you can hold that down, right? If you can spend that money without getting it back
If
right
you
away.
confront the money.
Right. Yeah. So that's kind of what we have done in the past. But just finding prizes that are on sale is even better, and prizes that people want. And then it's really important to choose the time of year that you do it. Super Bowl is coming and TVs are going to go on sale already. So I don't know that you're going to get a lot of people that are going to, that's not maybe going to draw them in to buy a ticket. Maybe it will, but the Blackstone might. They might want that Blackstone really bad. So we did our last one before Christmas and it was great. It encouraged some people, I think, in, hey, it's $10, might as well buy a ticket, or it's only 20. And then you have people, and we always, that's one thing that's we always ask for. We tell them the price of the tickets or just a small donation if they'd like to. And you will have people that will just donate a couple dollars here or there. We've had people donate hundreds of dollars just because they want to. Yep.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
Very.
I think you should do that at every fundraiser, no matter what
Oh, yeah.
what it is. You always just ask for a donation.
Every time. Yeah. Every time. Just always ask.
Do you find that people are more willing to donate if you're a 501c3 than if you are not?
Honestly, we don't have a lot of people ask. We have not had a lot of people ask. Now, some of the places that you stand outside of, you do have to be a 501c3. So, when we stood outside of a grocery store, we had to be a 501c3 in order to sell outside of there. So that does make a difference. But individual people, they don't usually ask. They don't. And I actually had a mom that said, how do I know that I can trust the people that are standing out there? Well, you're just having faith that they're good people and not just trying to take your money. So, but if they are outside of the store with a 501c3, they're good. You're good.
They're more trustworthy anyway. More, yeah. So how do people know how they get the prize?
So what we did is we did a live drawing on Facebook. We want to make sure that everything is on the up and up and that everything is clear, that they can go on and they can watch the drawing and it's recorded and it's posted on there, so they can always go back and watch the drawing itself and see the names of the people posted that have won, so that there's no question that that was legitimate.
It actually happened.
When you
It
sell them a
actually happened.
ticket, they have to fill out their name and contact information, and then they put that ticket into the bin or whatever and get it pulled out.
Yep. They put it into the bin, and then we have the other, they take the other piece of it with them that tells them who we are, what the Facebook page is, when the drawing is. And so they can always know. And that's also all, that's also gotten our Facebook page some more people, just traffic looking at that. And so I think that could be a good way that, that God could work in other people's lives too, is finding us through that, through that media.
That's a great, So you do it on your co-op's Facebook page.
Yes.
It's not a separate Facebook page for the drawing.
Nope. It's on our actual co-op Facebook page.
And that's pretty much all we do on that Facebook page.
Yeah, we don't do a whole lot on there, though. But there is information, and they could contact us through there, which we have had a couple that have contacted us through our Facebook page.
Well, and plus, all of those people that purchased the raffle tickets, they go to your Facebook page. They know that you are legit. And then next year, they see you out there outside the grocery store again. They're more likely to...
Right. They remember.
They remember. So then you're you're kind of trustworthy now.
Yeah. You're building some trustworthiness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, friends, that is where we're going to stop for today. But we hope you'll join us next week for the rest of this great interview with Riley Mohegan and continue to learn more about fundraising with us. We'll see you then.
Hey, friend, we hope you enjoyed today's episode. If so, would you take 30 seconds and share it with someone who may benefit from it? Or leave us a 5-star written review in Apple Podcasts. It blesses our socks off to know how this podcast is helping you. Also, make sure to connect with us on the Lead Your Homeschool Co-op Facebook page and join the conversation. We'll see you back here next time.